This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, British Prime Minister Tony Blair says he'll step down, and the system continues to leave children behind. Joining us to discuss these topics and more from our New York Bureau is Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. E.R. Shipp joins us. She's a professor of journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. She joins us via phone from Fire Island, New York. And also with us, Glenn Lowry, professor of social sciences and economics at Brown University. He joins us from member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. I thank you all for joining us today. I want to talk about the news that came down this week, and that's Tony Blair suggesting that he will not serve out his full term, that he is ready to step down. The question here, Michael Myers, is for America, not so much him stepping away and concerned about the successor, but what does this say and do for George Bush as he continues to plummet? Many say that Mr. Blair has never recovered from his allegiance with George Bush in relation to this war.
Well, Tony Blair has not recovered from his allegiance with George W. Bush because the Iraq War, in, at least in Great Britain, is very unpopular. And the people voted and let the Labour Party, Tony Blair's party, know. They're very unhappy. They're unhappy with Tony Blair. Blair, as far as the MPs and his own party, the ministers of parliament and his own party, is toast. He's finished. There was a revolt, a civil war, and of course he says, okay, I'm going to be stepping down before my term ends against his own promise, but he's merely buying time. With respect to your question about George Bush, it doesn't mean a doggone thing because the U.S. electoral system is different from parliament and in Britain. The president of the United States serves a term of office, 4 years. He can serve up to 2 full terms of 4 years, and that's 8 total. He's not going to be impeached. He's not going to step down. He's not going to give it to Dick Cheney. That would be even worse, if believe it or not. So there is going to be no change. The only change we can see in America is the upcoming election, and that will send a message to the Republican Party, but not to President Bush.
Well, while it doesn't change his status in office, Glenn Lowry, it has to say something for the politicos that watch this in terms of the continuing tenuous footing that this president, George Bush, I'm talking about, stands on.
Well, yeah, we are seeing, as Michael has said, the political repercussions of the war. I mean, hats off to Tony Blair, however, because the new labor movement in British politics has been very successful in staking out something that the New Democrats of Bill Clinton were never able to stake out, which is a successful centrist position at the heart of British politics. And, of course, now the problem for the Labour Party is to manage a transition. Their marred and scarred prime minister has got to step off the stage because of the Iraq War, but the new labor movement itself doesn't want to go down with it. As far as Bush is concerned, I think Michael's right. This doesn't have big implications for him, but it does suggest that, as I say, the political consequences of this war is bringing a lot of people down. And, you know, Bush is in the 30s, so he's probably going to stay there.
Hi.
All right. I think they told me ER was gone, but I think we have her back. ER, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, very good. ER, jump in if you would. I'm trying to find some correlation to the idea of Tony Blair announcing his departure and the idea that while we're not going to see George Bush announce his departure anytime soon, the personification of the man who stood in gale winds with this president leaving and most people suggesting that the war is what pushed him out must say something.
Oh, it does indeed. The local elections that were recently held, and I hope I'm not saying what Michael or Glenn already said,
yes,
sort of showed that. It was a referendum on Blair's policies and, to some extent, on his relationship with President Bush in carrying out the war on terrorism. The people united said that they did not want to pursue this policy any longer. And so Blair, reading the tea leaves, knew that it's time to announce that he will probably not fulfill the term he had promised to fill.
All right. We'll continue to watch that situation and see what the repercussions are, not only across the water, but on this side. More trouble, some might say, for the Bush administration when we're seeing that many schools in this country are falling short of the requirements under President Bush's education law. About 1,700 U.S. schools have been ordered to radically restructure their subject matters or face mass firings, closures, state takeovers, and other moves aimed at wiping the slate clean and getting behind the idea of meeting the requirements for No Child Left Behind. Glenn Lowry, again, this continues to be one of those programs that some will say one step forward, two steps back.
Well, you know, it's a tough problem. There is no accountability without consequences. So, you know, to a certain degree, something like this is inescapable. On the other hand, No Child Left Behind is a huge unfunded mandate. It's the federal government saying, thou shalt and thou must, as if it was just as easy as that. And of course, it's not. So, I mean, you know, but I would say that politically, it's either this or vouchers. It's either something like this, that is to say, an uncomfortable, disruptive accountability where lots of school bureaucracies are shaken up and forced to do things they don't want to do, or it's I beg pardon?
I'd say shake them up.
Yeah, well, we'll see, but it, you know, it ain't that easy.
Well, here's the problem, though. Here's the problem.
There's no magic bullet on this
idea. That's the idea that, as we reported on this program and the Associated Press first released reports of schools deliberately not putting in measures of minority students in order to boost their scores in hopes of meeting the mandates that had been put forth because of No Child Left Behind. These inclusion or exclusions made it easier for schools to meet these yearly goals. But this simply says that they are not meeting the needs of these students, which is supposed to be the bottom line.
That's the key point. It's kind of part and parcel of what led to the problem in the first place. Poor kids, many of whom are children of color, are not being educated. And for too many years, the systems have just pushed them along or played with the numbers or have done all kinds of things to make it appear that something is happening other than just providing nice jobs for teachers and principals and other officials. No Child Left Behind is totally imperfect, but it's a start, and it at least is getting us to focus on those schools that are not performing well. And according to the report I saw, we're talking about 3% of the schools that are receiving this intensive kind of scrutiny.
All right, Michael, it's going to be more.
Well, my view is that in a situation where the masses of our children, of school children, are consigned to the dung heaps of our schools, vouchers just won't work. There just aren't enough seats, assuming you can get enough money into private and religious schools. Not that I'm in favor of vouchers, because I'm not. Moreover, I think Elar is correct, but I will take it even further. We need a declaration of war on paternalism. We need to end social promotion. We need standards in the public schools. We need standards for teachers. We need standards for principals. We need standards for students. And we need parental involvement. We need a new attitude toward learning. We need well-prepared and effective teachers who are empathetic with the children, who believe that children can and will learn. We need students who come to school with high expectations and ready to study. We need parents who will push them to school and make sure they do their homework. We need an attitude of achievement. We need smaller classes. We need teacher aides. We need tutoring now. We need mentoring now. We need an examination of teacher union contracts. We need a radical reformation, and we cannot continue to have failure. I also believe
we've heard that cry for a long time, Michael Myers.
But it's finally happening.
I understand that, but as you know, teachers unions and others have fought and fought and fought against many of those things. And
yeah, teachers unions fight against standards for some reason. The civil rights community fights against standards in terms of tests. You can't fight against standards.
It's not only that. We need to spend more money. The things that Michael mentioned, the smaller classes, the teachers' aides, the mentors, and the rest, cost money. I repeat, it's an unfunded mandate. It's nice to call for good things. It's something different to tax ourselves and pay for them. We need to spend more money on the education of our disadvantaged children.
We
more
spend
money.
A lot of money.
More
it's
money.
Time to start, or stop wasting it.
All right. Let's move on to a disturbing story out of Liberia. This comes from a study from Save the Children. And frankly, this is a story that we've heard about 4 or 5 years ago. The United Nations and others said that they were going to look into this. But obviously, the problem continues. We're finding that girls as young as 8, between 8 and 18, are being forced to have sex in exchange for food by workers for local and international agencies in that country. E.R. Shipp, when you hear this and when you hear the idea that this is something that had been talked about and promised to be looked into, it has to shake at the core of what we always fear, and that's exploitation of children that continues, obviously, to go on.
It continues, and it continues beyond, unfortunately, beyond Liberia. I don't really know what the answer is. We've studied the problem. We know it exists. So now needs to come a change in the way women are viewed in society. We've seen that to arise as an issue recently, even in a major trial in South Africa, where one of the leading political figures was on trial for rape. And he used as part of his defense the fact that men are entitled to certain kinds of behavior, depending, you know, it doesn't matter the age of the female involved. And that's got people in South Africa, which is supposed to be more advanced than many other countries in Africa, that's got people there reexamining the relationships of males and females and what society offers in terms of protecting women and girls. We also see that, by the way, in Sudan. That's one of the techniques of war, or tactics of war, is to rape young girls and women, often in front of other family members, to intimidate.
Michael Myers, isn't part of the problem here the idea, as E.R. Shipp suggests, is that is when you have the Western world looking in, you're not only fighting the idea of, oh my God, abuse of children, but the idea that many of these countries do have a different take on relations between men and women, the status of women, et cetera.
Well, this is not a question of relationship between men and women. This is a question of adults abusing children. This is not sex in a consensual sort of way. This is sex for aid. This is exploitation of helpless children who are committed to having sex in order to get food. Mm-hmm. This is a failure of the human intellect. This is a failure of management. This is another failure of the United Nations. This is scandalous. And the answer is accountability. The UN must have accountable systems. To the extent there has been complaints, why haven't there been effective investigations? Why haven't there been mass firings? Why haven't there been an exchange of personnel in these places and effective supervision? This is outrageous. It has to end. It has to end yesterday, not today.
And larger beyond Michael's point, Glenn, the idea that many of these aid workers and peacekeepers are not necessarily from these countries, so they did not grow up with these thoughts.
Well, you know, I don't know the local situation on the ground very well, but it's an abomination. It's a horrible thing. I agree with everything that Michael said. It has to end. But I do think that ER's point about the underlying attitudes about women in these societies, and I'm sorry to be saying it like this because it sounds so judgmental, but what can I say? I mean, for these kind of acts to go on, people are complicit in them. I mean, it's not just a one-off transaction between a very bad aid worker and a very desperate woman. Other people in the surrounding setting somehow or another have to accommodate the fact that this is going on. And the point that I'm trying to make is men with power exploiting women and having their way, when people are at the edge of survival, this is an awful thing, and this is the thing that's going on the ground. And until there's some, you know, more fundamental kind of revision of attitudes about what decency requires and what can be tolerated, I mean, can we imagine this kind of thing going on in an American city? Perhaps, but only with a wild stretch of our imagination.
It does happen. No, it happens in American
cities. Yeah, well,
it's not just men against girls. It's men against boys. And
you know,
it's a failure of management and supervision.
Here's part of the problem, though, E.R. Shipp, and what we are seeing now from adults complicit in all of this are adults who, in fact, are selling their children for food. It's not just these girls going and saying, I'm hungry, I will comply. It is adults, parents actually selling some of these girls as young as, we said, 8 and 9 in order to get food for the family.
We've seen that. We're seeing that in these African nations we've mentioned. But we're seeing variations on that when you think about it here at home, where people push to desperate measures will sometimes sell their children, especially their daughters. It does go on in this country. It's just not as well documented, perhaps, so we don't speak of it, because it's easier to talk about foreign cultures than it is to look at what's happening at home. It's a shame. It's an abomination. It's not just management, though, Michael, because the UN can't manage all the people who are going over to provide aid. It comes down to the culture. So someone in leadership positions in those countries, moral leaders, et cetera, need to somehow speak up about this.
I hate to always bring race into it, but Michael Myers, do you believe if this kind of action were happening on the European continent versus the African continent, that we'd see a bigger cry from the world for the United Nations and others to investigate this quickly and make this stop?
No, I don't. I think the larger problem, and it is a large problem, of child abuse is international, it's global, it's worldwide, and it's in the United States. And the sex trade, prostitution, bringing people over who are undocumented workers in exchange for sex, and getting them to this country. This is the United States.
This happens. That's happening a lot in the Balkans, by the way.
It happens across the world.
Europe, but this very thing is happening.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's only a question of race. I think it's an abuse of power and power relationships. And there has to be, and when a power relationship, there has to be accountability, there has to be management. And the UN is in charge here. They're the ones who are supervising. Yeah. And it's the United Nations. They've got to do something in terms of international standards of
and
decency and morality.
And unfortunately, continued abuse of children, as Michael suggests, in ER across the globe. Glenn Lowry, Michael Myers, ER Ship, thank you so much. We promise to get to a look at churches preparing to rebut the Da Vinci Code, the movie coming out soon. We'll get to that tomorrow as we have run out of time today, but I thank you all. Greatly
appreciate
it.
We'll be back for the Da Vinci Code.
Thank you.
I'm going to talk about that.